Monster Professor.
Welcome to the Monster Professor, a show in which we discuss and explore monsters in literature, myth, film, games, folklore, culture, and beyond. I'm your host, Josh Woods, author, editor, professor, and monster expert. And today's an interesting episode, one that I invite you to check out on YouTube because I record the video of all of it. Our discussion will include not only clips from the films we're talking about as we talk about them, so you have a visual aid, but Pinckney appears in a slightly different form than perhaps you're used to seeing him. My guest is Pinckney Benedict, that is. He's been the guest on the show several times. I can't even remember how many times it has been. And so I've given you a full detailed introduction to him before. How about I'll just throw in some tidbits that you might not know about him? Since we're talking movies, how about a couple movie tidbits? He wrote screenplay that got filmed into a full feature-length film. It's a really cool one, and check, like, I'll let you go digging for that 4 days if you want to know for sure. And I don't know, he worked with Francis Ford Coppola one time. He even scared Ethan Hawke. So how about a couple of weird little trivia tidbits on Pinckney Benedict? But I think the most interesting thing you're gonna find out about him today visually is there on that YouTube channel, so check that out. Without further ado, Leatherface versus the Shape. Well, here on the Monster Professor, I get to talk with what was once Pinckney Benedict, a perennial favorite on this show. I have caught him kind of at a bad time, the moon cycle being as it is, and he's appearing as a werewolf with us now. Regardless of how he looks, those of you who are watching this on YouTube, if you're listening to this, you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But if you're seeing this, you're like, why is he talking to a werewolf? Welcome, Werewolf Pinckney Benedict, to the Monster Professor.
As a professional monster, I think the Monster Professor is the place for me to be. I was tempted to use one of these new AI voice changers that they've got too, but I thought I would leave the voice recognizable.
Yeah, then for a while, if you did that for a while, no one would believe I'm actually talking to you at all until they hear your rants that you're about to go
whatever voice I'm using, the way I express my opinion never changes. It's just now, I can claw you to death.
Indeed you can. So today, if you're tuning in just now without really knowing where we're going with this, we're gonna have a no holds bar throwdown fight over Leatherface versus the Shape. Or if not a fight, we'll pretend to be fighting for a while, but we'll probably end up just praising both the movies or if we can even stay on topic.
No, but that was the problem with my rewatching Halloween is, I was prepared to come in here and just crap all over Halloween, but you watch it and you're just like, oh, well, it's a goddamn American classic.
It really is. Perfect film.
But it did come after Texas Chainsaw. So I think, I agree that it will be, but I'm going to pretend to have contempt for Halloween that I do not really.
All this started as it was a year ago at this point when I released an episode in which it was just all about my off-the-cuff praising Halloween 1978. And then after that episode dropped, among the people who were upset about things that I have said, preeminent among them would be Pinckney Benedict saying something like, I can't believe Monster Professor dunking on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm like, Did I duck? Because I'd never go back to listen to my podcast or anything I said, in part because I'm a professor and we just say whatever and take no accountability for anything that we just said.
Exactly.
And so I don't remember exactly what I said, but I think it was something like,
I don't either, comparing... but it was base Callum. That's the only thing I remember. I can't even remember the specifics because I was so shocked.
I think I had said something like it's comparing Halloween, trying to talk people into watching Halloween 1978, comparing it to Texas Chainsaw. And I said something like, you know, it wasn't as gritty or gruesome like that. And I think to use a phrase from John McWhorter, people could smell it on me that what I really meant was Halloween is better. And right. the truth is I do put Halloween up just a slight notch above Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although it's a close second. And so that just turned into a versus. So I think what we're a rough formula for today is something like, maybe we'll talk about the films, as in right. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1974 to Halloween 1978, compare those to see which wins and whatever our criteria are. And then maybe we could even get into like Leatherface versus The Shape,
and that's
as
a really,
killers
that's a
and
really
let's fight
good
them.
One. Yep. And revisiting that was, because I think that's a good way to, because the movies resemble their protagonists, I think. And I think the protagonist's strengths and weaknesses are also strengths and weaknesses of the film. So that's a good way to approach it. And they're just great to talk about anyway. Like I love thinking about The Shape, images of The Shape. I so badly wanted to come to this conversation as The Shape. I knew I wasn't going to find a Leatherface avatar, but I thought yeah. I thought I might find something, you know, that was like a hockey mask or something like that, or you know, some kind of plain white mask, although maybe coming as Jason really would have been a big diss.
Yeah, we should have to. I don't know. Well, we'll get here's a little guy right there.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, great. Absolutely. We gotta have him.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just start there. Let's throw them at each other. Leatherface versus The Shape, or like what you're saying, that the movies resemble their protagonists. Meaning, of course, that the protagonist of Halloween is The Shape, and the protagonist of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is Leatherface.
I mean, I guess I didn't even give that any consideration, but yeah. I mean, they are, right? Or at least they're shared protagonists. Although I don't think there's any argument that Leatherface is the protagonist of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think, you know, Laurie Strode is arguably, you know, the co-protagonist, or the, I guess maybe she's the protagonist and he's the antagonist, but he's more important than most antagonists, I think.
Yeah. And it's his story from the beginning. Yeah. We start in his eyes. Through his point of view. And so if you're starting with that character's point of view, you know, at some point he's worthy to be considered the protagonist of the narrative. So what do you mean when you're saying like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre resembles who Leatherface is?
Well, I mean, because Leatherface, and if you compare the two, and maybe I'm going to the second part of the conversation first, but like, Leatherface dresses in, I mean, they both wear work clothes. And I was sort of, my original argument was that Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a working class movie, whereas Halloween is a kind of, you know, middle class to upper middle class movie. And to a certain extent, I still believe that that's correct, but Michael Myers is the guy who shows up to clean your pool, right? He's not one of those folks. So he's working class, but he's also very neatly dressed. Like he's very dapper, you know, like, and he's quite trim. And I don't know who Phelps was, but whoever Phelps was, his clothes fit Michael Myers admirably. You know, that, you know, the boiler suit that he wears, is like tailored to him. He's very fetching, and his mask is sort of it's not a parody of a human face. It's a simplified human face. Whereas Leatherface is big and sloppy in a way that Michael Myers just is not, right? And then there's so many sort of big sloppy people in that movie. Like I had completely forgotten about the driver of Black Maria at the end of that movie, at the end of Texas Chainsaw. The guy gets out and he's just like a dumpy guy you could find in, Carbondale, right? Like I love that. The hero of the movie, the rescuer, and that, what is her name? It's not Sally, is it? The
final girl? Yeah,
final Sally. Girl. Sally, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Sally just abandons him. Sally's not even like, get in the truck, bud. She's just like, oh, well, I'm out.
Yeah, when I was watching...
running.
Yeah, he's still running through the Texas wilderness out there.
Exactly. I was like,
wait a minute, is this going to offset the kill count? Because as far, by my count... on present day, within the present time of the film, they're both tied at 4 kills, and I thought, oh my god, is he gonna kill the truck driver right there? But he
right.
I think
maybe,
the truck driver gets away.
That's where he takes the lead. So Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a really messy movie, and the sets are messy, and if you just compare the masks, right, it's this sewn together, it's actually kind of hard to get a look at in the movie, a really good look at it, but it's this weird Frankensteinian, it's sewn together, it's got makeup on it, it's so slovenly, so sloppy, so grotesque, but I really found myself quite taken with Michael Myers. I was like, that's actually a really good look, like it's a very good professional look for him,
Yeah, and I think it seems to me that Leatherface has two masks, and just like he has two outfits, he has the apron, his workaday outfit, and his workaday mask.
The slaughter, yep.
Yeah, and
is
then
the mask different? I need to watch more carefully.
It looks like for the dinner, it looks like he's got his formals on because he's got a suit
he
now.
Put makeup on the plainer mask. But
he might be right because I think, but I think he even has the little eyelashes and the makeup and stuff. And so, and Melissa made sure because she's right on down the line on which one she's for, Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And she said, make sure you point out that Leatherface is adorable. Now, Michael Myers is cool, but Leatherface is adorable. And I think
yes,
that's right.
And I think that's right. That nails it because, I mean, it is impossible to watch that movie when Leatherface is rushing around going that woo noise and trying to figure out like, where are these people coming from? And are there more of them? And
like he's
somebody who's
scared,
not prepared,
he's getting home invaded. Yeah. He's looking at the window.
Exactly. And I mean, and that's the other thing, right? Like he never, I mean, except at the end, with Sally and Franklin, I mean, he has to be lured out of his house. Like they're banging on the door, there. I mean, and his relationship to the house is really funny. Like the fact that he, when he's locked out of his house, he chooses clearly many ways to get into this house, other doors, but he chooses to chainsaw his own door. Yeah. And then when the cook gets home, the cook's like, your brother chainsawed our goddamn door. the domesticity, I think that's what wins me about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the domesticity and the you know, I love that kind of thing, right? Like, it's the reason I love the Munsters. It's the reason I'll put up with the Addams Family. They're familial. They love each other. It's not a great family situation, but they're all dedicated to granddaddy. You know, they, I mean, getting that guy down the stairs cannot have been easy.
No.
And so, you know, so, but they really want him to be at this dinner and they want him to be happy. So I that domesticity really wins. Whereas Halloween, right, it really is this invasion of domesticity. Although, where are the parents exactly? Like, I watched it with Laura and we were both like, what are they? Is there like some orgy going on?
Yeah, well, you know, the seventies parents,
right?
Yeah, so probably, yeah. But yeah, it's a very Charlie Brown kind of world in which the parents just seem to not exist, and so, and I think, you know, maybe that's part of the that's part of the tradition that has become the slasher, that I have to clearly admit Texas Chainsaw Massacre invented, as far as I know, and at least Joe Bob Briggs also thinks this, and if he thinks it is probably
if
factual,
Joe Bob believes that, yeah, I believe it,
that, you know, that young people weren't in, or horror movies weren't about young people, they weren't about teenagers or very young adults until 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then they were, right? And so the masked killer teenagers,
there is the Blob, right? And the Blob really does, I mean it's Steve McQueen, so he was always 40 years old, but that really is, I mean, there are adults in that movie, but they never listen. They don't, you know, the kids are from the very beginning really trying to warn the adult world. In terms of, you know, slasher movies, or, you know, murderer movies rather than alien type movies or monster movies, I think that is probably.
Yeah, and since then, it's, you know, the slasher genre, like, oh, it's the typical slasher, like it's the mass killer killing a bunch of teenagers and stuff. Well, where'd that come from? Well, Halloween 1978 created the boom, and there was kind of a gap between its creation, which those 4 years, 1974, you know, and there was other things dabbled, like Hills Have Eyes, or other things that dabbled in between, but. So where are we at this point? I think we've got a few things established. We're kind of made the characters versus each other. Michael Myers, or the Shape, the Boogeyman, he's solo. I think that kind of puts him at a disadvantage if we're going to stack them up versus each other, because Leatherface got a whole family ready to back him up. They're not always for each other, but against the outsiders, you can assume that they are.
Well, but I mean, that's what convinces me that it's a real family. Right, yeah. Is they don't get along, but if anybody comes in and bugs them, they're just like, "Oh, I'm gonna kill them," and and somehow I had missed until this this viewing of the movie that it is the hitchhiker who does all the art.
I think he's the one doing that.
Leatherface at all, you know, because obviously he's the one who did it. Who made the weird statuary and stuff in the graveyard at the beginning. And I don't think I think that's that series of images is so startling and so well done. I don't think it ever occurred to me to wonder who did that, but I mean, it's very clearly in the plot of the movie. I mean, that's just me not seeing it because I was thinking about other things, but obviously he's hitchhiking back from having, you know, done that at the graveyard. And so one assumes then, because the cook is clearly not an artist, and Leatherface doesn't really seem to have that, right? So in my family, I'm the hitchhiker. I mean, in my family, yeah, of origin. If I had my brother's Leatherface.
And I think the Shape is an artist too, because he ends up creating kind of this weird sculptural monument to his sister the body of
if
Nancy.
If there is homage in Halloween to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think that's it, right? Is that, you know, he takes the headstone and I guess
kind of grave robbing
a couple of the bodies. You know, in odd postures or whatever, you know, and I mean, and the shape dresses up too. I have to admit, like these things I'd kind of forgot. The shape. What is that? Why does he put on the ghost costume? Like, what is he? You're the expert. What is he thinking there? Like,
Okay, I thought a lot about
I
that one.
assume that this was something that you had put some energy into, and so I'm eager, given that I have no theories, I'm eager to hear what your theories are.
Okay, so I thought a lot about this, and I'm not happy with anything I came up with, but kind of trying to think from his point of view, I think one, and to bring it back to our verses, Leatherface stands out. So if he's going down the street, everyone would be in their houses locking the doors very quickly, I think. And he wouldn't just go down the street, he would like sprint down the street. And so, but on one day a year, the shape can walk amongst us, and everybody's just walking past him, even making fun of the fact that maybe he's going to ask you out on a date, and nobody's really threatened. And so, and by the point, he's already in the house, walking straight through the door toward what was her name? Linda, PJ Souls. Yeah, Lynn, I think, I'm not so sure she would think that that's Bob, but under the sheet with Bob's glasses, he can, one more layer of mask to
Okay.
walk
All right.
amongst them. Or maybe he just kind of wants to know what it feels like to walk around as one of them. Maybe the mask and somebody else's coveralls, somebody else's face is his chance to see what it's like to be one of these
Well,
human
and
beings he
so
doesn't understand.
we don't see him. We see him only from like the shoulders down. Up until it's dark in the town. So is he in the early part of the movie, is he wearing the mask, or does he put the mask on when darkness falls? When he's driving around and stuff, is he wearing the mask?
I don't think so. Not until he breaks into that hardware store and get, and the, what is the Warren County Sheriff's guy like? Oh, they've just broke in and got some masks, some duct tape, some rope. It's just
That's
kids.
exactly Laura said, well, that's a rape kit. Like,
It's like, what? How do you like that for
kid.
law enforcement?
Oh yeah, no, I mean they're terrible. Okay, so that's he acquires the mask there. So until
That's
that time, see, I'm actually not that great on plot, I have to admit. Like I love moments, I
no,
love images, but I sometimes don't connect things like, oh yeah, that's where the mask comes from. Like, I just don't even, like, if somebody shows up with a mask, I never think to myself, oh, where'd that come from? Like, I don't need logical explanations very much.
Yeah, but I think, to get back to the Leatherface side, I think you're right that Hitchhiker is the artist who's been doing, and I think even references it that he was out there doing the sculptures. But within the house, I started to get this sense. Always got the sense that Leatherface was doing a lot of the bone
The
chandelier stuff,
domestic stuff and
and
like
as
the
if he
house
made his own face. I'm not so sure the Hitchhiker made that for him.
made the face. No, you're right. No, you're right. He did that. And he's, well, they make claims for him as being a good butcher. We don't really see that. And I'm not and there's the whole thing about slaughterhouses, but I'm not aware. I mean, no slaughterhouse operation uses chainsaws, do they? Like
I
that's
mean,
just
I don't
not
know.
gonna
Well,
be.
the bandsaw sometimes to get
We, yeah, yeah. No,
through, but chainsaw.
I'll buy a bandsaw. Yeah, I'll buy a circular saw. I'll buy, but chainsaw. I mean, absolutely not, right? I mean, it's just, 'cause it's a messy cut. It's not a, like you're not slicing anything with that. So he's kind of free balling it at home.
Yeah, well, maybe he's just better at the butchering than the rest, because the hitchhiker can't figure it out or can't do it quite right. And the cook, what does he say? He hates the killing part, but he knows
I
it's
don't like the
necessary.
killing. Yeah, no, he likes the eating part, but he doesn't like the killing part. Yeah,
So, and I think,
what? I'm sorry, go ahead.
well, and I was just going to keep them fighting each other. If like Or I don't know what the Shape versus Leatherface, like which one is the better killer of other people, and then versus each other. Leatherface is a huge dude. And in the 1978 film, the Shape's kind of small. He's not really much bigger than Laurie.
No, you're right. No, he is not. He is not, as Rob Zombie had him, he's not Tyler Mane. He's not a, yeah, he's not a pro wrestler. No, I watched some stuff too about Texas Chainsaw Massacre after I watched the movie. And it's so much harder to find interesting commentary on Texas Chainsaw Massacre than it is on Halloween. Like it just seems people have not. I don't know. There was maybe you can point me towards some, but there was very little of interest that folks had to say about it. But apparently, Gunnar Hansen was like a last minute choice for the part of Leatherface. They had some other guy already cast. I don't know if he was gigantic or not. I mean, and I guess he got drunk and he was weirded out by the part he was playing, and he locked himself in his hotel room and was just screaming, I'm not gonna do it, I'm not gonna do it. And so and apparently Gunnar Hansen, just lived there. I mean, I guess in Austin, and apparently, he's remarkable for his size. And they kind of had their eye on him before they cast this other guy, so they went to him. But Gunnar Hansen's perfect.
Oh,
Because he is not, he's not jacked. He's just big. He's just a really big guy. And it's a great lesson in how much being big is an advantage. That it's like, I mean, in physical confrontation, that being big is
yeah.
just really helpful, because when you bring that mallet down on, Jerry or whoever, like, it just, it's got, force equals mass times acceleration, right? And it's, you've got a lot of mass behind it, and he manages to get a lot of himself behind that mallet, right? He rises up on his toes, and boom. So yeah, no, that
Yeah.
it's really impressive. I mean, he takes everybody, like, and when he picks up that first girl, I mean, she looks like a doll, she's not a big girl anyway. But the contrast is really remarkable. You're just like, oh, well, she's just gone. Like that's, and but the and the two dudes, he just one hit, wham, he lays them out
Yeah, just drags them like they're nothing. And
like garbage.
The Shape, like there's one hint at, like if he can channel this evil, that Loomis keeps asserting he is true evil or pure evil, he's not a man. If he can do that through physical strength, you only get one hint of it when he pins Bob, very easily pins
Right.
Bob against the wall like a fly. But other than that,
And
he
he
seems
actually
to
picks
struggle
him
to.
up, doesn't he? I mean, he
Yeah, I
actually
think so.
lifts Bob physically, because the thing we watch is Bob's feet leave the floor, right? So he
Yeah.
actually takes Bob up, 6 inches to a foot with his left hand. But I agree that that must be supernatural. And that's one
Yeah,
thing I
because
really do like about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is that I mean, not that I have anything against the supernatural, but that it isn't supernatural, right? There's
then
no.
you're a werewolf right now, so.
Well, in a werewolf movie, I like a werewolf, but it's a commentary on what people are capable of in a way I think that Halloween perhaps is not. Because Halloween is about a guy who's possessed, or I mean, at least that's how it strikes me, right? That it is, since it's not physically possible for that guy to do that, right? And again, that's kind of a problem with the Rob Zombie. I mean, and there are many with the Rob Zombie version, is that, I mean, he's just a monster, right? I mean, he's so huge that nothing he does is surprising. But yeah, picking a guy up with your left hand and taking a butcher knife and pinning him to the wall. I mean, he must have got into a stud, right? Like, but pinning him to the wall with sufficient force that he actually stays there, that's pretty remarkable. And I guess he picks up that gravestone. Yeah, and that's got to be,
And carries it like up the stairs by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I train with some dudes who are actual strongman competitors, and yet I don't think a single one of them could just lift me up and then pin me to the wall and plunge
Right.
a chef's knife through me. In
All the
fact, if
way
you
through
put the,
you.
yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
put that, if World's Strongest Man should add that as a competition, like pick up a pig carcass with one hand, pin it,
They
and
do?
whoever can
Yeah.
do it wins or
Could
something.
they do a Michael Myers? Yeah. So
Yeah.
my assumption then is that Michael Myers' strength is supernatural. And maybe there's a kind of Samson. I mean, I guess it sort of depends on what you think of Loomis's analysis of, right? So if Loomis, took care of Leatherface, if because the movie, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, implies at the end that Sally makes it to civilization and that law enforcement shows up and they discover, this horrible family and take them into custody. Right. So if that's the case and Loomis ends up, being the guy who has to, look after the psychological well-being of Michael Myers. Yeah. Does he come to the same conclusion or is he like, well, this guy's bad, but Michael Myers is pure evil. Like, this is just a madman. This is just a, low IQ guy who was abused by his family and raised as a cannibal. And so, but he's not like Michael Myers, or would he also impute, is he just a, does he do this with other people? Like when he talks about the nurse later, does he go, yeah, that cigarette smoking nurse, clearly evil, evil to the core.
Evil.
I mean,
No,
does he just accuse
I
people of that, or?
think I think he would conclude something. Well, I'm gonna make him conclude whatever I would conclude,
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah.
which is something like I think Leatherface thinks he's doing his job. And I
Yes.
think he's doing his job as best he can, and he's making the mask to really embody this job that he's doing. He probably likes it, or at least he's the best one at it around the family, and they rely on him. And I think if you took him out of that and were able to communicate with him long enough to help him understand that you're not supposed to treat other human beings like food, or there is such a line. I think he would at least be show some response to that, whereas apparently Michael Myers was, for however many years, was looking not at
Right.
anything, just through space and time to this moment on Halloween night where he
Well,
finally got out.
and I'm intrigued though, given that how Loomis, I mean, obviously correctly, right? But how does Loomis come to the conclusion? And I know I've sort of abandoned the versus aspect of this, and I'll get back to it. But you know far more about Halloween than I do, and but I loved thinking about these things. And I assume people who know the movie better than I do have really thought about them, right? Have, really put the time in to go, well, how did, why did that happen? So what do you think, why does Loomis impute pure evil to a guy who's apparently just been catatonic for 15 years, right?
Yeah, I've often liked to imagine the scenes, because it's, what is it, like I tried to fix him for the first 6 years and tried to for the next seven to keep him locked up
Make
forever.
sure he
So
never got out. Yeah, right.
yeah, so about halfway, like years
So
and
about the
years and
time
years.
Michael was 12, he stopped
Yeah.
treating him.
Yeah, and so I don't know, but I like to imagine that there was more going on there than just that catatonic state. Even
Has to.
though if the security cameras would have only shown that, I like to imagine that Loomis was a Jung guy, or in the Jung realm of psychology. That's why I tore out a page of a Jung book on good and evil and
Well,
put it
no,
with
and I think
my
that's right,
Loomis
right?
board.
I mean, that's he's young. He's I mean, in the contemporary context, he'd be Jordan Peterson, right? You know that he's he's like, this is the embodiment of evil. I obviously have no Jordan Peterson chops, right. But that would be, you know, that recognition of, you know, chaos. Yes. That, you know, this is Tiamat, or, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That like there,
this
he's
is
a,
Rahab.
yeah, this is he's a he maybe at one point he was flesh and blood kid, but at any point perhaps any of us could have, you know, the trap door opened right out of our very chest, in which there's now nothing but bottomless void of pure chaos and evil, and he's just one more doorway for that, or at least maybe when he can get out and get a mask back on. Because as soon as that mask comes off, he seems to well lose everything, and all priority comes to getting the mask back on.
Well, right, and so that's where I talk about Samson, I guess, right?
Yeah.
The mask comes off, but he doesn't actually depend on the mask. I mean, he doesn't have the mask until he's well into his rampage, or I mean, at least, or he's getting ready. I guess he hasn't really. He killed Phelps.
Yeah, that's it. So without a mask.
The tow truck guy. Yeah, but apparently maskless. And we don't know how he killed Phelps, right? Like, they never mention Phelps again. Nobody, you know, I think they talk like they find his truck, but they didn't find his body or something. Like, I forget what it is exactly, but it's just really funny. It's like, there was a guy dead next to the railroad tracks, like, you know, between the, you know, the madhouse and Haddonfield. Like,
yeah, and Loomis was the only one who cared about it. He got there before the cops. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And he didn't, but he never said, like, you. I found a corpse, by the way. Like, you never. I guess
no. He's just he's on a mission. But I mean, all of this is kind of connecting to something I wanted to throw to you or ask you about, because one of the things that strikes my heart a little bit more for Halloween than Texas Chainsaw Massacre is about the opposite of what pulls on your heart for Texas Chainsaw is I really enjoy that glimpse or hint at the supernatural or the mythical beyond just what can be literal. And they never actually confirm, you know, that he is that the shape is the boogeyman, you know, that you can't kill the boogeyman, he's this other thing, but they hit you hard with it, as in that's a possibility. So they don't deny it either. You can read it that way. And I always felt, well, I until recently looking more closely for it, I felt like Texas Chainsaw was kind of missing that link to the mythical or the supernatural until watching it again. And then I'm thinking, you know, that at the beginning, the hippies are talking about Saturn in retrograde, and Saturn ate his children. And there you go with the cannibal, although I could be reading too much into it, but because it's really subtle.
No, I think that has to be, you know, and I don't know anything about Toby Hooper, but, you know, anybody who was educated in the, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s, as I assume he must have been, you know, and I guess he was from Austin, so he's from a, you know, an urban, like, he would have had that knowledge. I feel pretty confident. I mean, it does say, you're right, they do talk about how, you know, it's, you know, a bad moon is on the rise kind of thing, but, you know, that they're going into heavy weather because of those elements.
Yeah, and the literal connection to Saturn, you know, and the cannibalism, you know, Saturn, you know, eating his children, and then you've got, you know, the mark of blood that the hitchhiker leaves on there that looks kind of like it, one of the marks for demons in the key of lesser key of Solomon. Then you have I can't back that up by showing you one. In fact, it's probably better that I don't up on the screen.
I do not need to see that.
I'll just say reminds me of it. And then there's that totem left on Franklin's door. And I'm thinking maybe there is the connection to the mythological. Maybe I just wanted them, rather than reading horoscopes, to be talking about Polyphemus. And so that, you know, Leatherface is that kind of Polyphemus. You know, where they wander into his house and then he eats them.
No, that's a great connection. I think he is Polyphemus. That's exactly right. And the horror of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is exactly the horror of the Isle of the Cyclopes, right? I think in the Odyssey. No, that's right. Because, I mean, that story always, like, I can't read the, you know, or hear whatever, the story of the Cyclops and, you know, his eating, like, it's just so awful, right? The, you know, the way the sailors get munched on and stuff like that. But as you suggest, they're invading his domestic situation. And in fact, he does have family that would support him, although he's the kind of idiot little brother in the way that one senses Leatherface. Yeah. They're like,
gets tricked.
Shut up. You know, you're a dummy. And you know, why are you yelling all the time? No, that's right. That's a really good observation. This is, you know, it is the island of the Cyclops.
Yeah. I have to backtrack on several things, because, you know, one, I can accuse it of not having that supernatural connection, but I think I'm wrong. It's just really subtle, whereas Halloween is not. And then another accusation that
I think of Polyphemus as a monster, but not supernatural.
Well, yeah, I guess I should say, you know, at first I was thinking mythical. Like, I want the horror that I like is somehow connected. It feels like its roots go all the way back to as ancient as stories do. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre goes back to Ed Gein, but I never really saw it going back.
Sonny Bean. Have you ever read about Sonny Bean? You know?
No, I don't. I don't know.
Scottish. Yeah, he's a Scottish cannibal.
Like Hills Have Eyes are kind of based on, right?
No, that's
like
right. That family. That's exactly right. That's how I first heard about Sonny Bean. Would have been back in the 1980s when I first came across Hills Have Eyes, and commentary about that movie. And that was, again, a cannibal family. And apparently, like, when they found Sonny Bean and his wife, they had many, many children. And I mean, who knows how many children they birthed and how many they just stole from families they attacked and cannibalized. But apparently there were a lot of, you know, a lot of children, that kind of thing. But cannibalism is, I'm trying to think, Saturn probably is our oldest, right? I'm trying to think of older cannibalism. I can't think of any, like, you know, because Sumerian, there are monsters that eat people, but they aren't cannibals.
I can't think of any either. And I'm not so sure that Egyptian would be. Yeah, it might be. Yeah, and so maybe they're hitting us with the oldest, you know, our oldest tales of cannibalism is something with Saturn like that. And so I think, you know, so one, I think I'm wrong there, that there's the mythical thread. I think two, to get back into, like, the art of filmmaking itself, as I accuse it of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre of being more gruesome and grittier. But really, there's more nudity and gore for sure. Well, definitely more nudity. There's none in Texas Chainsaw Massacre that I can recall. Yep. And there's more gore in Halloween
would not
too.
Approve.
No, I mean, I've been tricked by the magic of Toby Hooper, in that he kept making me think I saw way more gore in Texas Chainsaw Massacre than I did. There's only one of his four kills shows any blood, and not much. Really,
the first guy, not Jerry Kirk, there's blood down the front of his outfit after he gets bludgeoned, when he's lying there kind of twitching.
Okay.
There is some blood running down the front of his outfit, and the twitching, but the blood is nothing. I mean, but the twitching is just nightmare. Yeah.
Oh God.
That he's not dead, but his, you know, his feet are doing that little dance, and Yeah, that's because it's sort of the post-death stuff that, and the way the girl is like, is she alive in that freezer, or
In
is,
the freezer, it's just like,
right, and
oh
she
God,
shows up,
it
but
freaks
she's
me
not.
out.
And so yeah, it's like the horror of being in the throes of death. But no, you're right. It does not depend on, and even the bones, for instance, are very clean.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, there are chicken feathers and stuff, but there's not chicken guts in the house. Yeah, it's not, and the bones have all been picked clean. There's not like flesh clinging to the bones and stuff like that. Although if I'd taken a quiz after the first time I ever saw the movie, I'd have said there was. I would have said there was,
Same here.
like rotting meat attached to everything and shriveled flesh and stuff like that. But no, it's
Yeah,
kind of
and
medical grade bones.
I was convinced I saw, I think Pam was the character's name, the first girl in the house.
On
I
the
was
hook.
convinced I saw her slid onto that meat hook.
Yep.
But then, and again, Melissa had to point this out to me to clarify, like, no, watch it closely. And then they, of course, there's that beautiful, my cat is interrupting me. You just want to be on YouTube again. There, you have to be on YouTube again. That beautiful, like track camera shot where it goes under that swing up to the looming house, which I think the cinematographer ended up winning an award for inventing the thing that they used for that first time ever or something like
Oh, really?
that.
Wow.
And so, and it's just a
This is like
beautiful
a Steadicam
cinematography.
shot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they built up the platform so it's a false ground or false earth, and they're riding underneath. I forget exactly
Really?
the
Wow.
those who know the cinema history could tell me what award or mention he got for that, because no one had done that shot like that before until afterward. Then everybody started doing it. And then you see her that open, vulnerable back over and over again. Then you see her
Right.
open, vulnerable back following her into that house, and then you see the meat hook, and then her back, and then the meat hook. They're like, oh, so by the time he just lifts her up and she stays there, I'm convinced I saw more gore than I actually did. And so,
No,
and
the
that, and so many
implications are terrible.
shots, I think you might agree that it's an art film,
Yes.
in a
Yeah.
way.
No, I don't think, I mean, I don't think there's any question that it's, it is one of those, 1970s art films. I mean, in a way, like, I don't know what, Easy Rider maybe, or I think of it, or Vanishing Point, if you know that movie, or even like Electra Glide in Blue, right? There were these, do you know Electra Glide in Blue? With
No, that one I don't.
Robert Blake as an Arizona motorcycle cop, little tiny Arizona motorcycle cop.
No, I
Oh
don't know that
yeah,
one.
that's, well, next time I see you, remind me, and I'll bring the Blu-ray with me, because that's, or if you find it, it's on some streaming service. It may be even Netflix. Or it seems more likely to be Amazon. But yeah. I mean, and there were, even Billy Jack. Right, where these indie films made with like pickup crews and non-actors and stuff like that on these tiny budgets, it's just, this one happened to break out, but it's obviously counterculture, although maybe it's not, right? Like, maybe it's, is it like, this is what happens when you're counterculture? Is it counterculture?
Yeah, I mean, it was clearly made by, Toby Hooper and his crew, a bunch of hippies smoking dope,
Right.
showing what they feared would happen when they're driving, say, in between Austin and
Right.
I don't know,
You're
Houston
right.
or
And so
whatever. They're,
in
so,
that way, for instance, right, that's exactly like Easy Rider. Yeah,
yeah.
is that if you get out between the cities and you look different, the rednecks are going to roll up right next to you, and put a shotgun in your face, or eat you, and feed your girlfriend to their grandpa. Or in Electra Glide in Blue, it's actually the reverse. It's a cop who comes up behind a hippie van. But that war is going on in these movies. And this is just one of them, right? But I think because of the horror elements, the violence, and or at least perceived violence, and that kind of stuff, like it broke through in a way some of these other movies did. I don't mean that, you know, it's more famous than Easy Rider, although I bet it is. You know, like if you took a group of my, you know, graduate students or undergraduates and said, okay, who here has seen Easy Rider? Nobody would raise their hand. They probably haven't even heard of it. But I bet they've at least heard of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And I think we can run a test on it right now, although my audience might be biased. But I'll just go ahead and say Easy Rider is not even close to being the quality of film as Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And we'll wait to see how many emails roll in of people.
No, but
I just said none.
I want to see the argument, right? Like, I mean, because that's a conversation I'd be happy to have. I'd have to rewatch Easy Rider. I mean, because it's, you know, it's probably been 20 years since I've seen it. But there are, you know, five easy pieces. Like, I don't, you know, whatever you want to, whatever, you know, counterculture, you know, dropout film you want to talk about. No. These films are both more popular and I think better. But I mean, that's the thing that Joe Bob Briggs gets right, right?
Yeah.
It's the art forms that the smart people condescend to, you know, that actually do connect to, you know, these ancient themes, you know, right? Like it's in a way, you know, because of the people who don't like it and the people who do like it, you know, we can tell just as easily as the elites can tell whether a movie is for them or not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my cat is tangling herself up in the window blinds. Hold on,
that's okay. Good for
she
cat.
Always it does. I'm kidding. Oh, you can't do that. Goodness. Only when I actually film some footage does my cat actually come to life again. She's like the grandpa in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. She's just utterly ancient and only comes to life at the weirdest moments. So, you know, I think you're exactly right in that kind of, you know, why isn't Texas Chainsaw seen as an art film like these others? Well, they wait around for what's the key phrase now? Something like elevated horror. And I love Joe Bob Briggs or John Bloom's. No, he says it more in his Joe Bob character. So we'll say Joe Bob Briggs, you know, says elevated horror is horror that takes place above 10,000 feet, you know, like snakes on a plane or something like that. until they get Joe mad Bob. With him.
Thank God for Joe Bob, right? Like I have learned
more
from Joe Bob Briggs and, you know, and like, the, you know, the rating systems, you know, for the movies, you know, four breasts, two lopped limbs, you know, like, you know,
the countdowns,
and the foo, all the foo, you know, like angry nun foo,
mallet foo,
right? Yeah. Well, and that's, but let's talk about that because we've hinted at this in our, you know, sort of prep conversations or, you know, lead up conversations. Right. Is well, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And interestingly, although not in the posters that I've seen, but in the film itself, chainsaw is two words. It is very definitely in the typography. It is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, not Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, and that's a mistake. I don't mean that there's any significance to it. I just think it's interesting. Right. Because. But chainsaw, like the chainsaw is used a little bit to butcher Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the only person who's killed by a chainsaw is,
Franklin. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Franklin. I keep wanting to call him. And Franklin, weirdly, Franklin is must be his maternal grandfather, his mother's father's last name.
Yeah, because
Right? Isn't
weirdly,
that
like
odd?
it's the old Franklin house,
The
but
old
it's
Franklin House,
Franklin.
and he's
So
the
is he
Franklin.
Franklin Franklin? You know, I
Well,
think he's
what I'm
Franklin Franklin.
assuming, that's why I say it must be his
Oh, maternal.
maternal side, right? Is because his mom then was, was Mary Franklin, but she married, Joe Pyehole and became Mary Pyehole, but she named her child Franklin for her father's last name, which is a bit odd, but I mean, I'm named Pinckney Benedict, so I know. All three of my names are last names, so this does not seem strange to me at all.
He's okay, and so he's going back to this house, or they're all going back to this house where he was raised, and he remembers it all. And the Sawyers, or the Chainsaw family, who eventually, I think, only in the sequels, are end up being called the Sawyers,
I
or in
didn't
part
know they
two.
were the Sawyers. I've never
Yeah,
seen the
but
sequel.
Part two is absolutely just hilarious. And so, I mean, what a
Okay.
great direction to take it. Toby Hooper was like, rather than try to, 10 years
Good.
later, recreate
Right,
it. I mean,
right.
I think it's indicated in the poster when they, at the time, Breakfast Club was really popular, and all the horror people just utterly hated the saccharine movie that was The Breakfast Club. And so they put the whole Texas Chainsaw family in the same pose with Leatherface, like
Oh,
doing the Judd Nelson, like, yeah. And so it's just total camp hilarious. So you definitely got to see it, but it has nothing, don't associate it with the first film at all, because they're
No.
two
But
different worlds.
see, in a way, I guess, yeah, it's not that I didn't want to see it. Like, it never even occurs to me that there's another one just because the first is so amazing and it ends. Like, it really does end. She's riding away, she's laughing. In the way that happens at the end of Hills Have Eyes, like she's become what she beheld. In some way, she just abandons the truck driver. But then the epilogue does imply, well, in fact, even the prologue, I think the John Larroquette prologue implies that the movie is a complete arc. And that these people are apprehended, and but I always wonder, why does the prologue pick out Franklin and Sally as, like, it says it happened to these people, but especially to Franklin and Sally. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I mean, Franklin did get killed like the others, but I mean, Sally didn't even get killed. Like, she's definitely the person it happened to least.
Maybe the survivor gets to narrate to the cops how it all wins
It
out,
happened to me
because
and
that's
my
her
brother
brother.
this
And two other hippies, I don't remember their names.
my really horrific boyfriend. And then this good
But I
looking guy
mean,
and his tiny girlfriend.
They don't, so the Chainsaw family, they don't seem like they've only just recently moved in. They look like they've lived there for since grandpa was young.
Right.
So I
No,
mean, like,
they
for
were the neighbors.
generations. So
I
Franklin
mean,
grew up
Grandpa, no,
next
great,
to him.
no, Grandpa knew, had to have known Grandpa Franklin, right? Like, I mean, because people, you could see their house, right? I mean, or, if one assumes that if you cleared the scrub and stuff, you'd be able to see their house. It looks like it's just kind of a little arroyo, or I don't know what it's called in Texas. But like it's a little swimming hole that has dried up. And Grandpa was theoretically, he was at least employable, we know. Like, he wasn't so insane that he couldn't have a job at the slaughterhouse. And he was great at it. So yeah, no. I mean, presumably presumably the two families would have at least been aware of each other. And they actually live in a much nicer house. I mean, it's better maintained. You sort of expect the haunted house family to live in the weird abandoned house, and for the kind of nice looking ranch house. Like, the house looks pretty nice to me.
It
And it's
is. It's beautiful.
beautiful woodwork.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and beautiful metal sliding doors right past the entryway. And
That
so I think.
door is, I mean, but again, it's things like that you just think, I mean, that's the objective Corelli, right? That's the thing that represents the family. is this kind of normal looking house, got some weird decorations, but then that door goes boom, right? And you know, like that's a death knell. That's, you know, it's over. Once you go behind that door and it slides shut, you're done. And it's so incongruous in that house, that, you know, this sheet metal, you know, kind of patched together looking door. But it's such a work of genius. Like, who, you know, and it has to have been intuitive, right? Nobody goes, this door is going to become a symbol of death, you know, for the next 50 years, right? They just went, well, they probably have a metal door in this house that slides shut like a door in a slaughterhouse or something. But like,
yeah, because it even has that ramp walkway up to it, you know, like
just the... I mean, but it, like, you would recognize that. I mean, you know, 50 years from now, if you showed me that, you know, half a second of video with no sound, I would be able to tell you exactly what it was from and where I was the first time I saw it and how it seems to me now. You know what I mean? Like, think of the power of that, of having, and it's not even, it's, and you go, okay, like, and this, I think, you know, I know we probably don't want to go that much longer, although we're both professors, we could talk until the death of the universe, but the, you know, so the ending image of Leatherface, which I do want to talk to you about a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Right. Is, I mean, that's really iconic. Yeah, and you just go, okay, that's this. But to have a door shutting, like a slightly unusual door that shuts, and it's, you know, it's as powerful an image as I can imagine from horror films, or really kind of any films, right? Like, what other, you know, can you think of other doors that close? Maybe the way Michael closes the doors, or whether the way the doors are closed against Kay at the end of The Godfather.
Yeah, honestly, I was thinking Godfather. I don't know if The Shining really does the door closing so much as opening.
But yeah, but I mean, right, but what a remarkable, you know, I don't know. It just seems remarkable to me. I love it when, you know, people create this image. You could just show it to people. I mean, it, people would know that was bad when that door shut. Like, it just speaks so much. There's no person in it or anything. Well, but back to our struggle, and I'm interested in how you interpret what Leatherface is doing at the end. I choose to believe that it is a dance of joy, and it's one of the things I like about Leatherface. Is like, Leatherface, he's a big, ugly, fat motherfucker, but he loves to dance, and he dances like nobody's watching. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it is chainsaw.
I have to agree. Like, my first indication, or my first, not indication, my first response, I just assumed it was clear that at first he's like, ah, she got away, and then that's gone from his mind. Yes, he's like, yes. I've got a chainsaw. Yeah, I'm at dawn.
Exactly.
I had just had a great night. We've loaded up the freezer. Life is great. And so he's David dancing in front of the temple.
I did my job. Exactly. Yeah. That's exact. And he loves the chainsaw, and he keeps it running, you know, and you know, and there's smoke, and no. I think that's exactly right. Like, if it had been, you know, a third as long, it would have just been rage at her escape, right? But it's also, it's like, do I follow her? Do I follow the truck driver? The truck driver's moving slow. I could probably give him a minute, you know? I think he forgets that he just lost. Like, I think he's like a goldfish. He doesn't really have, he does not have a long-term memory. And, you know, and so he's just out there, and it's like a lovely evening, and it's, you know, it's Texas, it's his home. And so he's just out there whirling around. The fact that he is capable of those kinds of emotions. And I mean, I know the point of the shape is emotionlessness, but it allows me to connect with Leatherface in a way that I really love, you know, and that he's like, woo! You know, their guest is coming, and the house is a mess. You know, and it, you know, it's that like he's an emotional creature, which I like very much, and his emotions are extreme.
I was stacking up when I was having them versus each other on a chart of mine, and a couple of them I put like emotionless for the shape and passionate on Leatherface, and he's a very passionate guy. Also silent on Leatherface and very noisy for for the shape, and
Right,
very
right,
noisy
right.
for
Very
Leatherface.
noisy. I mean, and they're such hilarious noises. Like, I'm just like, Gunnar Hansen got this guy. Like
Some pig squeals in there and some
he
whales and
imitates pigs really well. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he's very good at that. I mean, unless maybe he has a pig back. But I mean, he himself at some point does imitate a pig. But
Yeah.
he's really good at it. Like he's just hilarious. Like if he weren't violent, you would really enjoy hanging out with him. He'd just be this weird guy, and you'd go drink beer with him. And if he just works at the slaughterhouse, and you know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
if he weren't a criminal, you could like him, I think. And the shape, I mean, we do like the shape when the shape tilts his head, right? Like that's emotion, and that's a and it's such a great move. Yeah, that.
Yeah, he's well, and I think that's maybe, I don't think he's driven by any passions, but perhaps except unless you say, the aesthetic is a passion. And I think for the shape, he is if evil were an artist, but were poor, then it would be the shape, right? So he doesn't he can't he can't create, his vast cathedral made of the slaughtered and their bodies, but he can stab some people with the chef's knife that he stole, and then create this kind of this I don't know, the aesthetics of evil. And so I think I don't know if he necessarily, I don't think the shape enjoys what he does like Leatherface does. And there's something to, but I don't know. I like that. There's something about that that just clicks with me more. And I think, I've called Texas Chainsaw Massacre an art film, and I think, Halloween is just as cinematically beautiful. I think it one-ups Texas Chainsaw Massacre on sound. I think it one-ups it on lighting as well, because I've accidentally become a lighting snob in my movies. And if it's a little bit off, or if it's a little less than perfect, not that Texas Chainsaw Massacre was not wonderful, and some of those shots are museum
Well,
quality,
yeah, but it's
but
documentary style, right? I mean, it's a 16 millimeter. I assume Halloween was shot on 35 millimeter.
I think so, and I think that was most of
I bet it
the budget.
was,
Yeah, it
but
was
yeah.
$300,000. So at in
Right.
78.
Yeah, so
But I
twice the budget. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
but I think that, with Halloween, several things keep it feeling like a full narrative, and that at least it has a narrative through line. We've got Michael Myers is on the loose. Loomis is hunting him down. Of course, I'd love a movie with an obsessed hunter, a knowledgeable half monstrous obsessed hunter. And I just went off for hours on somebody else's podcast talking about, Terminator, Halloween, Jaws, Quint, Reese,
Well, and
Loomis.
Les Miserables, right? I mean,
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I've always liked Javert better than I like anybody else in Les Miserables.
Yeah, you can't
Because he's
help it. You just, yeah. And so, but what's the narrative through line of Texas Chainsaw? Well, not re it's kind of over right away. Like they're going on this road trip to find out whether their grandpa's corpse had been removed, it's stolen to turn into art in the cemetery. They quickly find that grandpa, Franklin and Sally's grandpa, is still his gr grave is undisturbed, and then everything else is just kind of wandering and getting bear trapped and kidnapped,
Right. And
I think.
yelling people's names. Franklin, Jim.
And
No,
so
and that did occur to me. I thought the element this film is missing is the hunter, right? Is the person who's pressing. Although, Loomis is really bad at what he does for being as obsessed as he is. Like, at the end, isn't he just like a couple houses down from where all the murders are happening and stuff? But he insists on hanging out at this, you know, abandoned house, and all the action's going on quite nearby, as far as I can tell. And he's just like, nope, got to stay here. He'll definitely come back here. And I'm like, all the teenagers are like that. He's done with that. You know, I mean, so, but no. I agree that there is a looseness to the story, that there is not tension in Texas Chainsaw Massacre the way there is in Halloween. Halloween's a better work of fiction, but in a way, it's the documentary quality that I like about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The fact that it is so cheaply made, and that it, you know, and that nothing's a set. Like, it's just they just got somebody's house and threw chicken bones all over the floor, and you know, and so everything looks real. You know, there's no, because with, I actually think it's not a bad sense of unreality to Halloween, but I mean, I think you would be aware, even if I didn't know about the history of the movie, like, I'd be aware, like, there are strangely few leaves in this town, you know, for an Illinois town at the end of October, and stuff like that. Like, wow, this is really not very Illinois. Like, there's sort of a staginess, or a cinematic suspension of disbelief. Whereas Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is an interesting title, right? And both these movies had previous working titles, and we can talk about, you know, how those work if you want. But like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is in your face with where it is. Like, it is absolutely local. And I know, well, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this, but Halloween says it's in Haddonfield, Illinois, but it feels like it could be any small town USA.
Yeah, right? I think, you know, and I know people have pointed out, like, you can even see a palm tree in the background of one scene. I've never seen it. Of course, I'm always lost in the film, but but I was, you know, first time and second time, just all over and over, they take me into the atmosphere of, you know, small Midwestern town at about Halloween. I'm there, I'm walking with the babysitters. I feel the little chill in the air. Like, they convinced me, and I was surprised. I just thought, man, they get it. Like, there's a, like, essentially about where I live here in Illinois, it's Haddonfield, or at least how it appears to me. And then when I found out that no, John Carpenter was just there in California, and like, Robert Englund was helping to sweep up the leaves, you know, back into the trash bag to scatter them.
So they could scatter them on block. The next one.
I was like, I was shocked. Like, how did it get it so right? And once again, I'm probably fooled by, you know, the great framing and blocking, the great sound, the great, everything they're doing.
And also, in a way, the almost the placelessness of it lets you put your place there, right? Because it's, in a way, I mean, we live well outside of town, but it's not unlike the little town I grew up in, Lewisburg, right? So, but it's not like, it doesn't declare, it's not, and maybe what would an Illinois movie that was not set in Chicago be? There isn't such a thing. Maybe Illinois is just no place, right? Yeah, and that's kind of. But I love how declarative Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, that it's in Texas, right? And even the outsider characters are Texan, right? They, you know, they've got accents. They're, you know, they're local. They're, you know, they want to be home before dark. So they're not that far from where they live. I assume Austin, you know, so, but it, you know, so it's very, it, you know, it opens with that armadillo, although now that could be Illinois. My wife, one of our outdoor lights went on at night the other night, and Laura looked out the window, and the goddamn armadillo just wandering through our lawn.
it's insane. But yeah, and that's, yeah, I think you're right that, like, it is Haddonfield, you know, is kind of a utopia, not EU, but the U, it's no place. But it could be any Midwestern town, or could be. I mean, it felt a whole lot like the Henderson, Kentucky, or Western Kentucky,
Sure.
where I'm
Yep.
from, which I guess, John Carpenter essentially grew up and started his college career there in Kentucky. So it feels just as much like a Kentucky, Western Kentucky movie as it does Illinois to
Yeah, it's
me.
just it's a nice little town. But what state is it in? Who knows? No, and none of the, none of what I'm noticing, I'm not like calling out continuity errors, because that's like the, I mean, sometimes they're funny. But that, that's sort of the lowest form of criticism in a way, right? Is like, it's because if I mean it,
Red letter media criticism.
well, and yeah, but I mean, like they, it's if you're noticing that stuff enough to critique it, then you're actually critiquing something else about the movie, right? The problem isn't the continuity errors. The problem is that the movie isn't absorbing enough that either you don't notice them, or you simply dismiss them because they're not the point, right? Okay, so my guess is that, like, my guess is John Waters was really influenced by Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I can't believe that is not true. Maybe it's not, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, like, in Divine, right? Doesn't John Waters use Divine in that way? Like the, the big man, but who is this florid, like, parody of a drag queen, which is already parody, right? And so, I don't know. I see way too much
God, I hadn't put that
congruence.
together, but now it's all like shuffling into place. Like you even got, cotton. Wasn't it Cotton and I'm thinking Pink Flamingos. I'm thinking he's a whole
No,
lot
on
like
Pink
the
Flamingos is what
hitchhiker.
I'm thinking of specifically.
And it's a whole lot like the whole family is a whole lot
Yes.
like the family.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
you even had the Bannister
Isn't
in Texas
Waters like
Chainsaw.
from Texas? Isn't he from somewhere in the South?
I thought it was Baltimore. I thought he was
Oh,
Baltimore
no,
through
you're
and
right.
through.
You're right. I'm just making shit up at this point.
But anyway, he must have seen that beautiful Bannister in the house in Texas Chainsaw and thought, man, I want someone to lick the entire Bannister. And so he has the
Exactly.
one
But
scene that freaks
there's
people out.
so much, and that's, that's kind of that, but I don't know. So I just think it's interesting. I mean, Waters is not, I would not say he's one of my favorite directors. He's a director I admire without liking much. I mean, not, I don't mean as a person, I don't, but I mean, his work, I would never say I enjoy Waters, although some of it, particularly Divine, I get a kick out of. But yeah, I mean, Waters is obviously influential. And I'm always interested in the influences of influential filmmakers. And I just felt like this had to be one, because you could put Divine could play a perfect Leatherface, I think.
Well, man, now all I want to do is go back in time and see Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, a different version with Toby Hooper and John Waters together, which Divine
Wouldn't that be
is
awesome?
Leatherface.
Wouldn't that
Oh,
be
man.
great?
It
Yeah.
makes perfect sense to me now. Actually, part two, it starts to go in kind of a Waters campy direction. And so maybe there's that play back and forth. It doesn't go all the way Waters, or not in the Waters direction, but it's kind of does. I mean, when Leatherface is kind of trying to seduce or maybe even molest a seduct someone this a seductress with the chainsaw, like that's a little bit John
Oh,
Waters.
yeah.
So
No, that really is that you. Yeah. No, so that is that's sort of some of the lineage I trace of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is not just to slasher film, but to like hard edge indie art film.
And I mean, maybe that's part of the reason why it seemed to have not, it didn't seem that like the slasher boom should have happened out of 1974, and it didn't happen until after 1978 Halloween. It just
after
didn't.
Halloween.
And so,
well,
and
it's
I
the
think
reputation maybe, of it. It's because of things like you're filling in the blanks and believing you saw that girl get hung on a meat hook, right? Like I think even now, Texas Chainsaw Massacre has a glamour of terror to it that I don't think many other films have, right? Like I think people are, you know, people know about it, but do they watch it? I mean, obviously some people do, obviously many people do, but like, do normal people watch it? Normal people watch Halloween, I feel. But I think you have to be a special kind of weirdo to, you know, really want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, you watched it with breakfast, so you are an extra, extra special kind of
6:30 this morning. We're like, you know, beautiful. What did, you know, how did Jerry die exactly? We got a breakfast watching Leatherman. He's just smashing
just down. Like, I mean, you know, I guess maybe they pulled Jerry down or something. Cause those, the two guys go down so fast. It's not, I don't think it's just the actor dropping to the floor. I think they must have jerked his feet out from under.
And
because the way he disappears, you know, it's just like, whoop, he's just gone.
Yeah. Well, you know what? At this point, I've had you for an hour and a half almost or something that, which is way more than I had meant to. So I'm stealing tons of your time. I know you're, as a werewolf, you only have so many hours of moonlight where you have
that's
to,
right. I've got to go
got a
rampage.
Lot of people to, yeah,
to go rampage, you know, find myself a zoo cage to wake up and picking stuff out of my teeth tomorrow. No, I appreciate your thoughtfulness that, yeah, I'm, you know, my time in this form is limited.
So to conclude, Leatherface versus the Shape is, I don't know. I think most of the time we ended up just talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but we never have on this podcast before. So there you go. If you're waiting for it.
No, but I think you nailed it right at first. Like I went into my watching of Halloween ready to pick out the ways in which it was, you know, kind of a film for pussies and, you know, not compared to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, and of course I just sat there going like, this is so good. Like, you know, this is, I mean, the thing that both of them told me is that contemporary movies suck.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
with a few exceptions. Yeah,
having I mean, of course, there's, you know, you get Ex Machina every once in a while.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, you know, Alex Garland by himself, you know, keeps making the best movies, and you just like, these people had nothing, and they made this, you know, these enduring testaments, right, to human interaction with evil, and in the end, victory over evil, even if temporary, which it always is. But you know, but then you give these people, like, they can do anything with their computers, and they have, you know, Chris Hemsworth, like, you know, the most attractive people on earth. And the stuff they make, and you go and you watch it, and you're like, what the hell? Like, this dude, like, he didn't have a camera. Like, neither of them had a camera as good as the camera I have in my pocket right now. And, you know, they didn't have any money. They had no backing. The system was not in their favor.
No.
And you know, but you compare it to the average cinematic film or you know, non-Korean film on Netflix, you know, and it's like, I just feel like they aren't even movies anymore. I don't even know what they are, right? Like, I go into them and I'm just like, did anything actually happen? Like, was there any taste to that meal?
Yeah, I'm I hate to be with you totally, but I am totally with you on that. And as you go back and watch these things, and they're just utter masterpieces. And
Yeah.
you know, AFI will never be a true list of great films until it has Halloween 1978 and Texas Chainsaw Massacre
Right.
1974 on
Exactly.
it,
And
until it
they
has that,
never
it's
will.
useless to me.
Right. They never will because, nobody can tell the truth anymore. Right. Like, and they couldn't then. I mean, I'm sure those films were disdained. I mean, every now and again, like Roger Ebert would get it right with some weird outsider film, but then he would also sometimes get it spectacularly wrong,
And his and I went back to you know, prepping for this talk too, you know, I went back and read the Roger Ebert reviews, and of course he's immediately enthralled with John Carpenter's, you know, Halloween. He's like, I don't get how this kid, whoever he is, out of film school, is so insanely talented, and it's just everything's done well. And he goes, and if you don't let me celebrate a movie like Halloween, then I'm a hypocrite, because we celebrate Hitchcock, right? And so this is that art. And then Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he's just like, you can tell, well, he'll just say it, like, he didn't enjoy the experience at all, and he can't, but he's like, but I can't lie, it was beautifully shot, wonderfully acted, all too effective. And he just kept struggling, like, but I don't see the point. Why is this movie? And maybe he struggled with no narrative through line, but I don't think that's it so
Yeah,
much. I
no,
think
yeah,
it
maybe,
disturbed
or
him, and
just that
he.
it's so distressing, right? Like, and it's still distressing. Like, when I sat down, I was like, am I actually going to just sit down and watch this movie, by myself at night and then try to go to bed? Like, it's literally visceral.
A Halloween is never scared me. A Halloween, of course, I didn't really experience it until I was an adult, but all it does is make me feel good. It's a heartwarming movie. I love the atmosphere. I love the shape. He's just so everybody's so cool. I'm rooting for everybody. And
No,
Texas
you're
Chainsaw
right.
Massacre
Yep.
stresses me out.
No, it's
It
just
really
really
does.
stressful. But the end, I feel like everything is paid for by that. I don't even know how long it is. It feels like it's an hour long. But that, that dance at the end with the chainsaw, like everything is paid for. I'm just like, that's like I would have gone through anything in order to have it end that way.
And so if you're watching this on YouTube, right now, where you're seeing, I'm cutting to the beautiful final dance scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and maybe we'll let this scene play out, and this will be the end of the episode. So once again, thank you for your generosity, your insights,
No problem.
and all your time,
I always
and
enjoy talking.
taking. So Pinkney Benedict, thanks again for being on the Monster Press Professor in werewolf form, no less. And if you are only listening to this, just check out the YouTube video version of it, just if only for a few seconds, to see how awesome this werewolf is in front of me. So thank you again, sir.
Right, talk to you later.